Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/HamNation and enter promo code HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 312 for August 16th, 2017. The solar eclipse and young ham of the year.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Ham Nation. It's a show all about ham radio. My name is Bob Heil, K9EID, and I'm coming to you from the Ozarks. And we have a whole host of really great people tonight to bring us news and comedy and technical advice and all kinds of stuff. And we hope that you enjoy it, and we'll see what happens from here. We have a very, very special guest, and this guest is the Young Ham of the Year, and we're going to learn more about that in just a couple of minutes. But first, let's go talk to George down in Mississippi. George, it's raining a lot there, right?
It seems like it has been raining constantly, but that's not quite the truth. It has rained just about every day for as long as I can remember back. Now, we did have a couple of days we got nothing, but today, two or three thunderstorms right here where I am. Transmitters, they've been holding in there so far, but a lot of internet connectivity that I use with them has been down. So we're hoping Comcast will get in line on that, get that squared away. I've got some splaining to do tonight again, Bob. We're going to talk more about that pine board transmitter that you've been building there, and we're going to draw the circles and arrows and everything on the schematic there and try to describe how it works.
Oh, that'll be great. Okay. Very good. Well, let's go down and visit Don and see what Don's doing. Is it raining there, Don?
It's not presently, but it has been just about every day. And with your Hawaiian shirt and with George's Hawaiian shirt, I feel a little underdressed this week. Of course, I wore mine last week thanks to Andy for that. You know, we're on the big WTWW. Shortwave on 5085 and 12.105. And Ted Randall wanted me to remind people to, if you have club news or any other information on, say, an outstanding ham that needs recognition or anything else that you've got going on ham radio related, you go ahead and send it to him at email at WTWW.com, and he'll be more than happy to pass the good word for whatever it is, ham radio related club news or anything else that you've got. Email at WTWW.com. And, of course, Ted will be broadcasting from the Huntsville Ham Fest coming up this weekend. And we've got a couple of other things going on with the Huntsville Ham Fest you're going to hear about as well. Newsline coming up, and also Dr. Tamitha Scove on the upcoming eclipse, which will be Monday, Bob. So it's a full show tonight.
All right. Yeah, good stuff. I've got some stuff about the eclipse also. But first of all, we have to thank Andy. Andy's really dressed all of us out, and I got this shirt in just today, so I thought it better get it on. And thanks to you, Andy. I appreciate it, and it's really a pretty one. Well, we don't want to waste much time because this is exciting for me. I met this young chap about 2 years ago. His mother brought him by the Dayton booth, and I was very, very impressed because it took myself back to when I was a youngster. And he's really made some inroads in the first few years of being an amateur radio operator. So, Don, why don't you get in here and let's talk to Marty and see what Marty's all about. We're very, very happy and congratulate him on this great award.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my my distinct honor to introduce to you the 2017 recipient of the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Memorial Young Ham of the Year Award. Of course, Bill Pasternak started Newsline and started the Young Ham of the Year Award back in 83, I want to say. And so Marty is just continuing in a long line of distinguished young people who are being recognized truly for outstanding things that they're doing in and around ham radio or for their country or to further the state of the art of ham radio. So, Marty, how are you tonight? It's good to see you on here, and congratulations. Well deserved. I've known Marty for about a year and a half or so now, too, I guess. So, Marty, tell the viewers a little bit about yourself and how long you've been a ham, and just introduce yourself.
Well, first of all, Don, it's such an honor to be here, and I'm super excited to be with you tonight on Ham Nation. So I was licensed, it will be 3 years ago this coming November, 2014, I believe. And I got my general in February 2015 and my extra in February 2017. But I've been mainly active on HF for the majority of that time since February 2015. I'm very much into contesting and a little bit of DXing and homebrewing and helping other people get in the hobby. And I'm really just an active ham, I guess you could say. I really love this hobby. It's the best hobby in the world, and it's so much fun. And I'm so honored, again, to receive this award and so honored to be here on Ham Nation.
Yeah, and you've kind of almost been bitten by the broadcast bug, I think, because you've been involved with several podcasts over the last couple of years, and the one that you've got going now with Sterling, N0 SSC, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, Sterling Coffee, another great young ham. He's a few years your senior. I listened to the latest one today, as a matter of fact, the Phasing Line. Good stuff. And yeah, you're a natural at this broadcasting thing, which kind of scares me. I want you to go get a real job now. Don't follow in my footsteps and don't be Peter Pan all your life. But you're going to be going to you're big into engineering and electrical engineering and things like that. And you're a brainiac. So I think you're too smart for broadcasting.
You're too sweet. I have a lot of fun doing that. And it's part of the adventure. I love being on the technical side of radio. Kind of on the other side of the microphone, but I enjoy doing that as well and kind of sharing my ham radio journey with the rest of hams out there, because I think that's super cool, and I like to take what I learned in ham radio and share it with somebody else, because maybe they know something that I don't, and maybe we can learn from each other. So I really enjoy doing that.
Well, that's what it's all about. So what was it that got you interested in this hobby as a then, what, 13-year-old?
Yeah, something like that. I found it on the internet one day, actually, and I found a video of some people tinkering with electronics, and lo and behold, they had a ham radio. And I said, well, this is really cool. I didn't know any hams, actually, and I just kind of downloaded an app on my phone and started taking practice tests. And then in November of 2014, I got my technician's license. I didn't know any hams, so it was kind of interesting when I took the test. You know, is your dad a ham? No. Do you know any hams? No. But I really met a lot of people through clubs, and I learned a lot talking in repeaters and just gaining information and listening and taking in what people had to say, because people were so really willing to share information with me. And that's really been a great honor.
That's good. Well, I'm glad that this hobby found you, or you found this hobby, because it's going to be mutually beneficial. You're good for the hobby, and I know the hobby is going to be good for you. It's like I tell a lot of young people, my son included, sometimes just having a call sign on your resume could be the difference between getting a job and missing out on a job. So, with all of the stuff that you're going to have on your resume, that ham radio license, your call sign is going to be a good addition. So what is the most enjoyable thing, or what should I say? What is the most challenging thing, I think, right now that you find that you do in ham radio? What challenges you the most?
Probably contesting. Contesting at radio sport is something where there's always more to do. You can always have a better score. You're never doing good enough. And I really spend a lot of time practicing, you know, SO2R, single op 2 radios, where you have, you know, one radio in each ear, and trying to get better and better and better. And I feel that pressure, you know, what can I do differently? What didn't work last time? And it's like, you know, when you get a test. You do a test in school and maybe you don't do so well. Well, you know, maybe I did this part wrong. What can I work on next time? Oh, you know, I really should have had the 40-meter antenna pointed another way at a certain time. And I will never know everything, and I certainly don't know a lot, but it's always a learning experience, and it's such a great challenge that it keeps me coming back time and time and time again.
Okay, one more question, then I'm going to turn it over to Bob to see what he has for you. Since you are fairly new into this hobby, and you came into the hobby after the whole code, no code thing, you've only known ham radio as not having a code requirement. Do you do CW?
I do get on CW here and there. I took a CW ops course to try and improve a little bit. I think it's great. I know there's a lot of debates about, you know, should have the code been dropped? Should it not been dropped? I think it's gotten a lot of people into ham radio who wouldn't have. But code is fun, and I think the fact that it's optional. I know among young hams that I know, it's made it something really cool and exciting and challenging to work on.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to do something because you want to do it, not because you have to do it. That's for sure. So, very good. Well, let me turn it over to Bob. I'm sure Bob has a few things to say. Bob, you've known Marty a little bit longer than me. Take it away.
Well, as I said, I met him when his mother brought him by the booth. I think it was the first year you were at Dayton. I found this picture, and how about explaining this a little bit, and what kind of reaction did you have to working the big one at W1AW?
Well, it's a lot of fun. So I've had the privilege of using a lot of big contest stations, although I hadn't had that privilege the first time I operated W1AW. But working from the mothership, per se, is so cool. And everybody at the league was always so supportive whenever I visit there, and it's a lot of fun to get on the get on there, use the fancy, the top of the line radios there, and that's always a blast, always a big pilot.
Oh yeah, yeah. Have you been there more than once, or do you go often?
I've been there twice or three times. When that photo was taken, I actually went there for a night. I spent 2 days there and ran a lot of pileups. Used the big ICOM 7700s and spun the big knob, and it's a lot of fun.
That's great. If we said to you that you're going to only have one radio and one mode, maybe even one band, what would that be?
Right now, I think just bang for my buck, it would probably be an ICOM 7300 on sideband, probably on 40 meters. And I say that for a couple reasons. So the 7300, I think, is the best value radio, the best value you can get in any radio on the market right now. It's absolutely amazing. It's the future. In 40 meters, I say, because you can always work something on 40 meters. Any time of the day, I can get on the band and work. There's always something to work on 40. And phone, because I really just enjoy phone. And 40 phone is a special.
I certainly agree, and I find myself on 40 meters a lot, and especially around noon, the AM net goes well. I get on AM, and I spend most of my time on AM, either on 75 or on 40, but you're correct. And I that's my advice when I have people come to me and they just got their license. They want to know what band, and it's 40 meters because it's open just about all the time. Well, that's really super, and we agree totally on that.
I always tell people when they ask me, you know, what should I do to put up, you know, get on the air? I always say, no, don't put up these magic antennas. None of these NFED all band G5 RVs, whatever you want. Put up one antenna for one band that works really well and get comfortable with it. And I always say, just put up a 40 meter dipole, and you'll have the time of your life.
Oh, I love you, because I fight this all the time. I was on last night, and some guy jumped in, and he had a G5 RV, and he's trying to use it on 160 meters. Well, I got a tuner.
No.
Yeah. Okay, you got a tuner, but you don't have an antenna. I do, and it works good on 20. I said, yeah, that's what it's made for. But, oh, God bless you, because it's true. You need – one antenna for one band. Yeah, you're going to have a whole bunch of wire out there, but yeah, you can do it with fan dipoles and stuff like that. Well, I wish I could be with you guys this weekend, but it isn't going to work. That's the problem. I need to be about three people and make all of my other happenings, because I'm running around doing theater organ concerts, and then we've got the plant back in Illinois. Of course, Sarah owns and runs that, but I'm working on a couple of new products here in the lab, and oh boy, it's crazy. Are you doing a lot building? Are you into building?
Yeah. I'm always, you know, whenever I'm in my station, I say, what isn't working right? And then I say, well, how can I fix it? And oftentimes that's, you know, etching a circuit board or building up some cables or designing what I need to make my station work. I've built all the antenna switching for my station, for example, is all automated, and that was all homebrew because there's nothing more fun to me than pulling out a soldering iron and figuring out what I needed than building it. And that's what's one of the really cool things about ham radio. We can make what we need, and most of the stuff isn't that complicated. So I really enjoy that.
Well, you know what the next question is going to be? Are you building one of these?
It is on. It's one of the things I would love to do. I am certainly going to start. I just haven't had the time or resources, but it's so cool. And I love the Pine Board, how that's bringing everybody together. And it brings me back, you know, it brings back building to ham radio. And I think that's super cool and super important.
That is exactly right. Well, it's nevertheless some of us old characters, and I'm just trying to bring people up to speed on some of these things, and it's really a pleasure to hear that you're going to be building. That's great. Well, maybe you can get some time and build a pine board project, and you can meet up with us when we get all this going and get all these pine boards on the air. Don, started your pine board so you can work, Marty?
I have not, but it's like Marty, it's on my list of things that I definitely want to do. So I will be doing a pine board thing, that's for sure. One of these days, I'm going to get around to doing it. Let's see if George has anything. George, do you have anything for Marty before we get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline?
Well, Marty, I just want to say congratulations, and I'm looking forward to seeing you over in Huntsville. And I know our friend Chris is going to be there as well. So maybe we can all get together and have a big snipe hunt.
Yeah. I'm so honored, and I'm so excited, and I hope to see all of you, everybody in chat, and everybody at Huntsville this coming weekend. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, Bryant is going to be there as well. Bryant's going to be there as well. So we'll rope Bryant into the snipe hunt as well. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I want to say one thing, and then you guys can round it up here, Don. The door, and I told you this several years ago, the door is always open. We always have an open microphone for you. So send us an email and say, hey, I want to come and talk. So get a hold of any of us, and we'd love to have you back and come on as a regular and tell us what's going on in your world, because your world is very exciting to not only myself, but the thousands of listeners that are listening and watching this program. This is a great platform, and we'd love to have you come back, Marty. So thanks for coming.
Yeah.
And be sure and remember where we are,
certainly.
Okay?
Yeah, I'd certainly love to come back and visit. It's great to be here.
Very good. Well, Marty, thanks a lot. We're gonna join Marty on stage at 2:00 Central Time in Huntsville, Alabama, on Saturday at the on the floor, actually not on the floor, of the main stage of the Huntsville Ham Fest. And if you can't be there in Huntsville, because I realize it's a bit of a trip. It's a 6-hour drive for me. It's a long flight from Boston for Marty. So wherever you are, you can join us virtually through the auspices of Tom Medlin, W5KUB and W5KUB.com. The Helmet Cam guy, he will simulcast that as well as all of the Huntsville Ham Fest. And, of course, if you get in his chat room, he's got some great prizes as well. So check that out, Tom. We appreciate that. Tom's been webcasting the Huntsville Ham Fest for many years and has always been a good friend to us at Amateur Radio Newsline and given us the airtime so that people all around the world via W5KUB can watch these amazing young people in amateur radio. Marty, you're a great choice this year. You were a unanimous choice, which does not happen very often. So I'm looking forward to seeing you again. I just saw you in Dayton, but looking forward to seeing you again on Saturday up on stage, Marty. So we'll see you then. Okay, buddy?
We'll see you then, Don.
All right, very good. Marty Soloway, KC1CWF, the 2017 Bill Pasternak Memorial WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year for Amateur Radio Newsline. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week now from Amateur Radio Newsline, and we'll have an eclipse-related solar update from Dr. Timothy Scove. So here's Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2076, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. A number of radio amateurs are listed among the winners of this year's awards from the Radio Club of America, the world's oldest professional wireless communications group.
Winners include Dayton Hamvention spokesman Michael Coulter, W8CI, recipient of the Barry Goldwater Amateur Radio Award. Michael was a prime mover behind Hamvention's relocation this past spring to the Xenia, Ohio Fairgrounds following Hara Arena's closure. Michael is also treasurer of the Dayton Amateur Radio Association. Other recipients include Ulrich Rode, N1UL of Florida, who received the Lifetime Achievement Award. Antenna designer and university professor James Breakall, WA3FET of Pennsylvania, the recipient of the Sarnoff Citation. The Fred M. Link Award has been given to Peter J. Madsen, K2PM of Michigan, for his work in land mobile radio communications. Another radio amateur, Robert Hobday, N2EVG of New York, who had been named RCA Fellow in 2016, was awarded the Jack Popel Award for his work in radio broadcasting. Fellow ham Charles Kermis, W0CBK of Colorado, was given the RCA Special Services Award recognizing his involvement in the RCA's Youth Activities Program. Congratulations, everyone. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
The awards will be presented November 17th in Pittsburgh. While scouts are resting up after a very full week at their national jamboree, organizers are counting the QSOs and the merit badges.
The Boy Scouts of America National Jamboree was a great success. The tentative numbers that I have are that 2,457 scouts visited the demonstration station, 305 merit badges were earned, 1,259 contacts on HF and VHF were made, 2 balloons were launched with APRS payloads, 3 summits on the air activations of Garden Ground Mountain were completed, 140 satellite contacts were made, and 198 unique call signs on our nightly net were logged. While the final numbers from the BSA have not been released, we feel that we did meet our planned goals for the station and the merit badges. All of the gear provided by our sponsors worked extremely well in spite of poor band conditions. We thank the many operators on the other end of the QSOs that helped provide the scouts the opportunity to make a contact that met the requirement of their merit badge or provoked an interest in the hobby. QSL cards are already going out for the event. Please visit our website for QSL information and balloon tracking. For more information on radio scouting, please visit www.k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
Finally this week, the United States Senate has confirmed 2 commissioners to fill the empty seats on the FCC. One of them is a returnee.
Former FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel, a Democrat, is returning to the commission, and Republican Brendan Carr, the FCC's general counsel, is joining the panel following the 2 presidential nominees' confirmation by the Senate this month. The FCC now comprises 2 Democrats and 3 Republicans, filling the panel's 2 longstanding vacancies. Jessica Rosenworcel's previous 5-year term ended in late 2016 when the Senate did not act on her renomination by then-President Barack Obama. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Stephen Kenford, N8WB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you August 19th at the Huntsville Hamfest for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award, and right here next time on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
The sun's activity really picks up this week. We have a new region that's rotating into Earth view. It's even fired off a solar storm to our east. And are you ready for the eclipse? Did you know it brings its own unique form of space weather? Those stories and more in the news this week. The sun's activity is really picking up this week. Aside from the total solar eclipse that's going to happen on August 21st, where it cuts all the way across America, I'm going to be broadcasting live from one of the NASA centers in Missouri, but more on that later. We have region 2671 that is becoming into Earth view. It started growing a couple days ago on the sun's backside, and it's been firing off little things here and there. It's even fired a huge solar storm that has now gone east of Earth, and we will be watching it as it rotates into the Earth strike zone sometime around this weekend. Also, we have this big coronal hole that could be giving us some fast wind at Earth here in the next day or two, so there's a good chance for some solar storming. So combine all these things together, and the space weather this week is really looking exciting. Switching to your M-Flare threat meter, you can see we've been pretty quiet for quite some time. And then on August 14th, we started popping up above the C-class level. This is because of region 2671 as it rotated into Earth view. It's now regularly giving us C-class flares. So for you amateur radio operators, this means more noise on the bands. And this will continue even through the eclipse as long as this region is visible, probably around over the next 10 days or so. And we do have a risk for M flares here, but we haven't quite seen it reach that threshold. So just be ready. There could be a radio blackout or two. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see the last time we actually had activity was clear back at the first week of August. Since then, things have quieted down, and we've been sitting at unsettled conditions to actually normal conditions for quite some time, which I know is pretty boring for you aurora photographers. The good news is we have a chance for some solar storming coming here in the next couple days because of this fast wind. We might even see storming at mid-latitude, so you actually have a chance to capture some aurora. Now let's talk about the other unique thing that the sun has in store for us this week, and that's the total solar eclipse on August 21st. If you go to eclipse2017.nasa.gov, you can see all sorts of activities that they have lined up surrounding the eclipse, including viewing locations and even citizen science projects, some of which are space weather related. Now, I will be broadcasting on live TV at one of the 12 broadcasting centers that NASA has set up in the path of totality. I'll be located in Jefferson City, Missouri, along with the Glenn Research Center folks, and we will be broadcasting live starting around 1700 UT time, that's Zulu time, which is about 1 o'clock Eastern time. So now let's talk about how the space weather of the eclipse actually affects amateur radio and GPS. Now, the unique thing about the eclipse is that it kind of mimics a sunset and then a sunrise. So what is perfect for that is this particular plot that shows basically the three different regions you have with amateur radio propagation. You have the daytime, you have the gray line, which is when the sun sets or rises, and then you have the nighttime. But during an eclipse, it's kind of different. So we can actually just take this and change all the labels. Here we have this, instead of it just being daytime, this becomes the pre-eclipse region. Now, during the partial eclipse, it kind of mimics a gray line. It's almost like the sun is going down. So the gray line becomes the partial eclipse region. And then the nighttime, this actually becomes what the region is like in the path of totality when there's a total eclipse. Everything goes to night. So if you kind of look at this plot this way, it really gives you a much more intuitive feel as to what's going to happen when the eclipse occurs. On the amateur radio bands during the day, you have the D and E regions, so those long wavelengths, like 30 meters on up to 160 meters, you can't really play on those. But as the sun sets, or in this case, as we go through the partial eclipse, the D and E layers, they begin to collapse and disappear. That means you open up the bands from 30 to 160 meters, and you might actually get skip conditions, especially as we move on into the totality where you have a total solar eclipse and it's like nighttime. Now you get all these new conditions that you hadn't expected, and you will likely get contacts that you never expected to get during the day. And then when totality ends, it goes back to the kind of gray line conditions because of the partial eclipse. It's almost like the sun is rising again. And then once the partial eclipse is over, the D regions and E regions reform, and it's back to the daytime conditions. And we'll be reporting about all of these space weather effects as they happen. So be sure to catch the live stream. And I know Bob and Gordo will be monitoring 6 meters to 160 meters during the eclipse. And I'm trying to get some of the ham radio ops from the Glenn Research Center to get on the bands too, so we can say hi. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast wind. It should hit us starting around tomorrow and possibly into the 18th. At high latitudes, we're expecting minor storm conditions with about a 70% chance of a major storm. At mid latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions with about a 25 to 30% chance of a minor storm. And this is great for you aurora photographers. You've been missing storm conditions for a while. We might actually get aurora down to mid latitudes so you can capture more pics in more places, which will be wonderful. But don't worry, you amateur radio operators. These conditions will be quieting down through the weekend, and it should be all nice and quiet for the eclipse. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we are watching region 2671 now that it is rotated into Earth view. It is a threat for M flares, even though it's not that big a threat yet. It is popping off C-class flares, which I'm sure is making the ham radio bands a bit noisy. NOAA has upped the flare risk to about 10% right now, and we might see that continue to increase depending upon how this region grows. So we are at a small risk for radio blackouts right now, but nothing super substantial at the moment. But these conditions will continue over about the next 10 days until this region rotates out of the Earth view. So the space weather this week is extremely exciting. Not only do we have some fast wind coming that should give us some solar storming so you aurora photographers can get your pictures, we have a new active region that's rotated into Earth view. It's been firing off some solar storms as well as some flares. We might even get an M flare or two and some spectacular pictures there. But we also have this total solar eclipse that's going to be going from one coast to the other of the United States. It's going to pass no less than 14 states on its magical journey, and I will be there live in Jefferson City, Missouri, hopefully talking to amateur radio operators and other people that are going to be watching it. I'm going to even try to do some periscopes, some live periscopes behind the scenes, so I'll keep you updated on that. Take a look at my Twitter feed for updates on when I can do the periscope, so I'm going to try to sneak some cool stuff from behind the scenes there. And I'm also even ready with my Space Weather Woman Eclipse Field Reporter shirt for 2017. You can see the eclipse right there. Guaranteed, I'm going to be wearing this on August 21st when we broadcast live. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Great stuff. So thank you so much. Looking forward to your eclipse coverage. And if you would like to do some citizen science of your own, go to hamsci.org, H-A-M-S-C-I. Put ham science together, you get hamsci.org. And you can check out the solar eclipse CUSO party and how you can get on and help do a little bit of propagation research. I'm going to be running whisper mode. I can't decide if I'm going to be doing 80 or 160, but I'll be doing whisper during the eclipse, probably on 80, maybe on 160. It depends on whatever I feel like doing. But you can get on there and do that as well. Get on and register, and you can be part of the citizen science as well. So very good stuff. And just a little bit of housekeeping. I gave you the wrong email address earlier for WTWW. It's email at WTWW.us. If you would like to email Ted and the group over there at the shortwave. So, Bob, I think that'll do it for this part of the show. And back over to you now for the Pine Board.
How do you follow that?
You can't. Oh, you can't. Well, and the shirt is epic. The Space Weather Woman shirt is epic. I may need one of those.
That was. Well, I knew it was coming up, so I went to Lowe's this afternoon. I want you to all follow me. Do this. I went to Lowe's, and I bought some things. I spent just a couple of bucks. It wasn't very much. And what I did, I'll show you right here. I bought a cover for a regular outlet box. Now, you do the gray one because they're industrial, and they're outdoor, and they're stronger. That's just a box, a cover for the box. And I drilled a hole and I put a coax connector in there. And then I drill the other two holes, and I'll show you in a minute why you do this. This is a really cool way to make a center insulator. But the wire that I use for this, now you understand I'm going to be using probably a 706. I might do the one of the 7600 or something, but we're not going to be running a lot of power. And the wire that I like to use is thermostat wire. And you're going to say, what? Why that? Well, number one, thermostat wire is it's light and it's solid, but there's two conductors in it. So you twist them together and it gets it even stronger. And this is your antenna wire. And I cut 33 foot two pieces. And what happens there? I made myself a 40-meter dipole. You heard Marty a while ago. You don't use anything but dipoles. He even said it. He stole my words. I say it all the time. No infire, no L's, Q's. No, a dipole. It works really good. I mean, you can't beat it. You really can't. You're going to have guys tell you, oh, you need to. I'm telling you. 60 plus years I've been using dipoles and nothing ever beats them. The only other thing would be to do a coaxial dipole, but there it is, 33 foot on each side. And what I do is kind of clever. I've been doing this for years with just pieces of fiberglass or printed circuit board stuff that just piece of plexiglass works. I drill two holes. And what you do is you lace the antenna wire through those holes, and that gives it a lot of support and a lot of strength. Here's what the backside looks like. There's the backside. And that backside not only gives us the ability to put the coax connector on, but we can make a loop so we can hang it. And that works so good. And you end up with a wonderful 40-meter antenna. Now, you can make it 75. You just do it 65 foot on each side. But this gets you on the air. Why am I doing this? Because we're having a party in the front lawn of Heil Sound Monday. Sarah's got everybody ready. They got all their glasses and everybody's happening. They're going to cook something. And we're going to have an eclipse party in the front lawn of Heil Sound. And right next to us is a Krispy Kreme donut shop. So I think we'll be okay, Don. I really do. I really do. And we're going to see what
happens.
Pace
yourself, Bob. Pace yourself.
With my because they've got this big party happening. So I want to be back at Heil Sound, and I have no radios there other than all the radios we test, but no antennas. So we're going to throw this up in one of the trees we got, and then, hey, what can I tell you? So that's the story from here on the eclipse. I'm ready to go. It took me maybe 2 hours today, and here it is. I'm ready to rock and roll. And it's just so easy. So for any of you who say, oh, it's so hard. No, there's nothing to it, as you see. And you know, the last time I did this, remember, this was a long time ago on Ham Nation, I did this. Roger at R&L found me a $150 ICOM transceiver in the parking lot at Dayton 1 year. And I did this antenna, and I put it up. I could only get it up about 15 feet. What was the first contact I made? Anybody know? That'd be a piece of trivia. I'll tell you. It was London, England. So there. It's just so exciting. I'm telling you. It's so exciting. And
was that on the extension cord antenna? Was that on the extension cord antenna, Bob?
Do what?
Was that on the antenna you made from the orange extension cord?
Yes, the one back. Yeah. Couldn't find it. Yeah. I tried. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's right. The home dipole.
So
the home dipole. Why not? Yep.
Everybody says you got to do all this. But no, you don't. You use what you have. And I'm telling you, this little thermostat wire works great, and it's not very expensive. Now, we're not going to put a kilowatt into it. Yeah, that's right, Don. I used an extension cord. I used the wire from an extension cord.
Yeah. Worked
great. And we worked London. You remember that? That was cool.
Yes.
But it all boils down to the fact that this is what we're doing. However you want to shake it out, there it is. And if you don't like that one, you do it on 75 meters. Yes, you have to have antennas for each band. Now, you know what else you can do? Let me show you what else you can do. This isn't NBC. We don't have great productions. I'm sure Anthony's going crazy because he's trying to say, what the heck are these guys doing? What you do is you go out here and you put another wire and you make it 125. I usually like to start off with 66 foot aside and then trim it. And one piece of coax, 75 meters, 40 meters. You want to get really crazy? Do one out here for 20 meters. You do, it works super. And you don't need a tuner. You go in and cut those for the frequencies you're using, and voila. So things are really, really happening. We're excited about it. Well, I have to get on to some of this particular project. I have gotten so many emails this week. I got one a couple of hours ago, and I have to show you this one because Gene is the guy that does all of these beautiful drawings, and he was so excited because he got his MFJ QRP SWR meter today, and he found out he's got 1 watt, and that's before he tuned the coil. He's going to get probably out of that what's going to happen at 150 volts. He'll get about 2 watts out of it, and when we get on to more, he'll get 5 watts out of it. But he's thrilled. See, when you turn it on at first, you don't know what's going to happen. Well, he turned it on, and look what happened, and that's Gene, W4IQN, that does all of the great drawings. I got a note from Dennis, N6DGM. Look at this beautiful thing he did. I mean, he's showing us all up, I'm telling you. Look at this. This is beautiful work. He really did a nice job and did it right. And Dennis, you're to be congratulated, I'll tell you. That's the back sides of it. There's the front of it. And he got, I thought it was really cool. Those are very vintage dials that we used to have. He's got purple chicken heads, and everything's really right. So, you know, you're just going to be able to go all kinds of places with this. It's not, you got to do exactly what Heil said. No, we're just guiding you. Now you do as Dennis. You go in and do your own thing. We'll give you the circuits, but man, you can do your own stuff. We have also some news for you because some guys are finding out that the 2.5 millihenry choke is not available from Antique Electronic Supply. Well, you go to online components. There's a lot of places that have it. Mauser, M-O-U-S-E-R, has them. Just look around. Put 2.5 millihenry choke in Google, and you'll find all kinds of people that have the chokes. But we're so excited because you guys and gals are sending all these great pictures in and stories of what's going on. So keep it up, and let us know what's happening in your world. We want to... We want to make sure that everybody maintains the fact that this is dealing with high voltage. I get those letters, too, from some of the curmudgeons. You shouldn't be doing this because you're going to electrocute somebody. No. We're going to help you to teach you to respect the voltage, no matter if it's 12 volts are 2,000 volts. So you respect that voltage. We've built our chipstick, and you know about that. If you don't, go back and review it. And be aware that it's lethal. Even 12 volts could be if it's enough current. So be aware that it is high voltage, and keep one hand in your pocket and don't touch anything else unless it's with an insulated tool. And mainly don't bother it when you've got it turned on. Now you don't need to. But anyway, you are doing a great job, because I'm getting letters from a lot of you. Some of you that's building this with your children, and you're telling me that you're helping them to learn about respecting voltage. So that's cool. We want to let you know that we're really making headway on all of the clips. If you'll go to HeilSound.com, and down at the bottom of the page, Michelle has put all the clips that the team there at Petaluma has, just the clips of the pine board. You don't have to go through the whole program. We got about four or five of them that they're working on right now. And Victor will be busy for the next day or two. I guess maybe Anthony too. But anyway, we'll get you all lined up, and just this is really fun because there's a lot of comments and ideas, and of course every parts list schematic that Gene has done and the drawings. So be sure you look at that. QRZ has a forum, and there's a lot going on there, as well as EHAM. So just look up the forums for Pine Board Project, and you'll join in the rest of us. So that's pretty much what's going on here. And I really appreciate all the nice letters we're getting, and I appreciate your time and your talent to get involved in this. George, I know you'd love to do this, but you're fixing real transmitters these days. we appreciate that. But you got some really big stuff going on here. We got to pay attention now. So,
yeah, I've got some explaining to do now.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get a spot in here from ICOM real quick, and I'm going to come back and tell you about a couple of neat giveaways going on, and then we're going to jump over here, and I'm going to play Space Charge Weather with the schematic.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. Contest season is here. ICOM's high-performance and innovative transceivers will help you make the most out of contest season. Continue your contesting momentum with the IC7300. Ideal for the ham on the go, it's a high-performance HF transceiver with a compact design, RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. The IC7851 will give you the competitive edge you've been looking for. Raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this HF 50 MHz transceiver. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. And don't forget about the ICOM IC7700 and IC7600 radios. Both of these top-of-the-line transceivers are still available and sure to be the perfect companion for this contesting season. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Register for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And that new radio for August is going to be the ICOM ID4100A dual band transceiver. It's an entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features, built-in GPS receiver, full dot matrix display, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, available Android and iOS application. Of course, it does both analog and D-Star, and there's a lot more. They've really upped the game on this radio right here. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation, and register to win. Sign up, good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And there's another contest that's, just getting underway here. It's going to be the 12th anniversary of Amateur Logic coming up in October. And ICOM has teamed up with us. We're going to give away an IC7300 along with all the goodies you need to get it on the air from MFJ. It's a great radio. You know, we've seen it here several times. I should have one in here next week that we can look at. But go check it out, amateurlogic.tv/contest, and get all the rules and details right there. Well, now we've got some explaining to do. As I mentioned earlier, you know, Bob has gotten to the transmitter on the Pine Board project. And a few weeks ago, I explained how a pentode works. Well, we've got a couple of pentodes right here. It's the 6AG7, which is going to be the oscillator and the final output tube or transmitter for our Pine Board. And we've got a 6V6 here, which is a pretty common audio tube. That's going to be the modulator. And, you know, the modulator is really just an audio amplifier. But let's talk about how you put this transmitter together. You know, there's not a lot of parts here. And if you look at some of the big, what they call heavy metal AM transmitters, you'll find on their schematics, there's not a lot of parts in them either. You just got to put them together in the right way. First, let's look at the power supply here. We've got 150 to 300 volts DC. We've shown you the power supply before, talked about how that worked. The voltage comes in, and it's going two ways. First, we'll just go up. Right here, we've got a 4 Henry choke. All right, we'll go on up from there. If we followed on up, we've got a 0.001 microfarad capacitor off the ground. Then we've got a 2.5 millihenry choke right here, and it goes on up and goes to the plate of our transmitter oscillator tube. It also goes across right here and goes to a 22 k-ohm resistor that's going to the screen grid of the modulator, or excuse me, of the transmitting tube. And there's 100 picofarad to ground right there for some suppression. And it goes out and goes to the plate of the audio tube or the modulator. There's also a 22 k-ohm resistor right here where it's feeding into the screen grid of the modulator. So the same voltage is feeding the plates of both of these tubes as well as feeding the screen grids through a 22 k-ohm resistor in each case. So it's dropping the voltage down some, but that's pretty typical. You'll see that design in a lot of transmitters. Some might have a separate screen supply, but there's an awful lot of them that do it just like this. The next stage we'll talk about is the oscillator. And the 6AG7 is hooked up like an electron-coupled oscillator. The good thing about this design right here, you know, at first you'd say, well, if you change the tuning out here on the plate of this amplifier or oscillator, it's going to change the frequency of it. Well, that's not the case when it's done this way. You can see there's a crystal sitting over here, of course, that oscillates at the frequency that we're going to operate at. It's coupled through a 0.001 microfarad capacitor into the screen grid. The other side of that crystal is going into the control grid of our oscillator tube. And, of course, we've got a 56 k-ohm resistor down here to put a little grid bias on that control grid there. We've talked about grid bias before. So, essentially, that crystal here is just across the control grid and the screen grid. It doesn't really see the plate circuit that's sitting out here. So when the tuning changes out here on the plate circuit, we're not going to see it over here in the oscillator. So it'll stay on frequency. That's a good thing. Of course, we've got the cathode going down here to ground. That's pretty typical. You know, we've seen that before in tubes. And up here on the suppressor grid, it is connected to ground as well. And, you know, that's pretty typical on a suppressor grid, too. We talked about those when we talked about pentodes last time. Now let's talk about how this tube acts as a transmitter. Well, you know, it's already sitting there oscillating at the frequency that we want, so that's good. We've got the plate circuit here. Follow it on out. There's a 2.5 millihenry choke here. That's going to block the RF from getting back down into our power supply so that, you know, we're not having RF down in it. There's no need to send any that way. First, we don't want it in the power supply. Second, it would just be wasted. So we've got a choke there that's going to suppress that, along with this 0.01 microfarad capacitor. But if we follow the plate on out, there's a 500 picofarad capacitor in series with it. That's going to block that DC from getting out here to our antenna, or the output circuit of the transmitter here. It's called a plate blocking capacitor. So it just keeps the DC off of your output components in the antenna, but lets the RF pass through. This circuit right here is often called a tank circuit. Essentially, it's just a coil. You can see it's a variable inductor here, and we've looked at that. And we've got the 360 picofarad capacitor going from the input to that coil to ground. If you look at these two here, that is a simple L network, not unlike what you might see in an antenna tuner. A tube is a high impedance device. So if you're sitting out here with an antenna that's designed for 50 ohms, and you've got a high impedance tube, you're going to have a mismatch there. So that's what this does here. This matches the high impedance of that tube to the 50-ohm antenna, or vice versa, so that you can get maximum transfer of power. Because when the impedance of the source and the load match, you'll get maximum transfer of power. Look at my notes here to see... Yeah, that's all I had to say about that, pretty much. Now let's talk about the modulator. This is where it gets interesting. The preamp down here, or it's from the audio preamp, we're taking the signal, putting it into the control grid here of this 6V6 tube. We've talked about the preamp. This works basically the same way that the preamp circuit we talked about previously. So I'm not going to cover all these components down here, but just suffice it to say, if you go back and look at the preamp section, you'll understand what all these parts here do. Now, we mentioned we've got, you know, the voltage from the B-plus supply goes to that 22K ohm there and is going to the screen grid. Now, that just, you know, kind of helps improve the efficiency a little bit. You'll notice that the suppressor grid is not connected here. So although it is a pentode, the suppressor grid is not being used. Now, if we follow the plate circuit on up here, you know, this is going to have the plate voltage that's going in to supply that tube. That's coming, well, it's coming through this inductor right here, and it's getting the B-plus from out here, same place that the transmitting tube or oscillator tube does. And you can see, you know, that's the same line there. That goes on up through this 2.5 millihenry coil and goes on to the plate of the tube. So this is called a modulator. How does that work? Well, this choke right here is called a modulation reactor, or modulation choke, you could call it. The type of modulation we're doing here is constant current. Another name for it is Heising modulation. The way it works, you know, when your tube here on the grid of it, when it's got positive and negative signal coming into it, say like a sine wave, audio, voice, whatever, with those positive and negative peaks, the conduction of this tube is going to change, and it's going to change how much current that tube is drawing through the plate here. If you remember about inductors, an inductor tries to oppose a change in current. So what's going to happen there is when this tube starts conducting, it's going to draw more current through the plate circuit there. If we follow that on out, we can see that that's being supplied by our B-plus supply, like we said earlier. And we've got this choke here. Well, what does a choke do? A choke tries to oppose a change in current. Well, the current's going to be changing here at the audio rate. So how can it, what can this choke do to try to maintain that current? It's going to change the voltage, because that inductor there is either going to boost or buck the swings or changes in current there. And, you know, that's going to cause a voltage to go up or down. But when that voltage goes up or down, if you follow it on up here, it goes to the plate of the tube, right through there. So we're changing the voltage that's going to the plate every time that modulation swings negative and positive. The voltage up here is changing at the same rate as the modulation. You'll get a little change here on the screen as too. You know, you can see the 22K ohm resistor that the screen voltage is coming through. It's going to be affected just the same as the plate voltage is being affected. So this modulates the tube. The oscillator produces a frequency that we want out here with the crystal. This choke here, modulation reactor, changes the plate voltage, and that creates AM modulation or amplitude modulation. So there you go. That's the magic of radio right there and what makes a simple transmitter work. Bob, have you got anything we need to add to that?
Not a thing. That was really, really great. I don't know if the video's going through, but no, it was great, and I thank you very much. That answers it, George. It really nailed it. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And I had to do a little research. You know, I've dealt with these transmitters and things for quite a few years, but I always like to go back and do a little research before I try to tell somebody else how it works. So I learned something myself in the process. You know, never hurts. Well, you know, we like to give away stuff here, and Gordo's not here this week, so I'm going to give away one of his books, and you can take your choice. It can be a general class guide. It can be the extra, the technician, or the general radio operator's exam. Bob, I think you've got a question that we can use this week. What is that?
We were talking about this antenna that I built.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if anybody can tell me what's wrong with this.
I'm not sure if I can see it well enough.
Huge mistake. I did it on purpose because we could use it.
Yeah, I think I know.
Yeah, I see it.
Yep.
It's pretty obvious if you really study it hard, but you got to get in there and look.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep. And send your answers to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and we'll pick out somebody who caught Bob's mistake there. You don't see them often, but that's a pretty good one right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was on purpose, too. I figured, you know what? I could do this, and I did. So let's see what happens.
That's good stuff. Hey, guys, I think we better talk about Casper and then get over and talk to Amanda. What do y'all think?
Let's go.
Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost, and they're helping bring our little shindig to you tonight. Casper is totally revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly on to you, the consumer. The Casper mattress is obsessively engineered at a very fair price. It is made of supportive memory foams multiple for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. TWiT has video, I don't know if they'll show it tonight, of Leo Laporte actually doing the great Leo swan dive onto his Casper mattress as he pulls it out. Here it is. Oh, you got to love this. Leo's going to do the great Leo Laporte swan dive. While I tell you about the breathable design, it sleeps cool, helps you regulate your temperature all through the night. There he is pulling it out of the box. The Casper mattress will give you long-lasting comfort and support. You can buy it easily online, and if Leo can do it, you can do it. Leo got his Casper mattress. He loves it. It's soft and comfortable, and as you can see, it is Leo Laporte belly flop approved. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality, here we go, oh, the humanity. You're going to spend a third of your life on this thing, and you know it's got to be comfortable. Going to the mattress store and spending 20 seconds just doesn't do it. That's why Casper gives you a painless free delivery and painless returns with a 100-day period, so you don't have to just spend 30 seconds in a showroom. And did you know, statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom is meaningless, has no correlation to whether the bed is right for you. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental protection standards. They're made in the USA, free shipping and returns to the US and Canada, and now across the pond to the UK for our British friends over there. Get a Casper mattress today. You can save an additional $50 towards your mattress purchase by going to casper.com/hamnation. Enter promo code hamnation. casper.com/hamnation. Promo code hamnation. Terms and conditions apply. Do your own Leo Laporte swan dive, but rename it something because that name is taken. And you can't have our Amanda either because Amanda's ours. Everybody else has Amanda. We have the Amanda minding our chat room. Hello, darling. How are you tonight?
I am doing swell, and thank you for that commercial. If I hadn't just bought another bed, I would love to try one of those. I'm just saying. Maybe for my guest room, huh? All right, let's see here. I have one question for Bob. And that is WB3BJU says that you had a great segment on the dipole. Is the coaxial dipole also called the double bazooka?
Yes, it is. But you got to be careful. There are a lot of fake coaxial dipoles. The real one is an MIT design, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, in 1938 for the government. And there are some variables in there. You don't want to do that. You want to cover that one. That's the one that really is and it's broadband. That's the dipole works great, but you're going to be limited in its bandwidth. That's why you have to cut the ends off a little bit, tune it around, but it'll work. But the coaxial dipole is broadbanded. It'll cover all of 40 meters, no tuner needed, flat, one-to-one. It's great. And if you have my handbook, there's a whole chapter on it, page 25, and we really get into it, and it's the right stuff. It's the MIT version. So if you have it, that's where you want to find it. There's a lot of on my QRZ page, too. But that's the one, and it really works, the MIT coaxial dipole.
Very good. My next question for you is, now, after watching Dr. T's video tonight, where do you think you're going to start off on Monday during the eclipse? So what band? What are you going to try to do?
40 meters. That's what I cut that dipole for. I'm going to stay on 40. And I don't. If I would be here, I could have all the other antennas, but I don't. So we're just going to go to 40 meters and see what happens in that 2 or 3 minutes.
I think it's going to be so fun. I'm really looking forward to your video. And I hope the rest of you guys, I'm going to unfortunately be at work and I'm going to be able to step outside and watch the eclipse. Don, I don't know about you, if you're going to be able to watch it. I'm guessing not, because you're going to be inside a building and all. But I hope the rest of you guys also get on, if you're at home or wherever, and you can try it out. Don, what are you going to be able to witness the eclipse at all?
Yeah, it's actually going to be probably 85% down here where I am. There's a link where you can look it up by your zip code. It's all over Facebook. So go to Facebook and just it'll scroll by your feed, believe me. And that's going to be about 85% totality down here. So, yes, I'm going to be able to see it. Provided that it's not cloudy or rainy as it has been. And also, I'm going to set up my radio before I leave to work whisper modes, the WSPR. I'm not sure if I'm going to do 80 or 160, but I'll probably end up doing 80. And I've already registered with hamsci.org for the Solar Eclipse QSO party. That way they'll be able to pick me up by my call sign and add me to the data. If you go to projects there along the top, or just scroll down, Anthony, scroll down there and you'll see the RSVP for the SEQP right there. If you click on that, that is the Solar Eclipse QSO party. You can go ahead and RSVP for that, and that way they will get you on the list and figure out what bands you're going to work and everything else. But Whisper is going to be monitored, and the PSK Reporter, and even if you just get on and work voice, SSB or CW, it's all going to be logged in. But I'm going to be doing whisper modes just because I think that's going to be the coolest. And I'll be able to actually log into my computer from work via TeamViewer and through my software, the WSJTX, I believe it is. I'll be able to actually switch bands if I want to. So I may pop back and forth between 80 and 160 while it's going over. That's my plan.
That is really, right. Really cool. I hope you have a fun time doing that. George, are you going to be able to do anything for the eclipse?
I'm going to try to. You know, I'll be going to Huntsville this weekend, so I won't get back till Sunday night. But I'm going to try to slip away from work a little bit Monday. It's going to be, I don't know, around 1:20 or so in the afternoon here when it comes over, and about 85%, same as Don. Yeah, what I plan on doing is listening to the AM broadcast band. And the reason I'm doing that, it's going to behave, you know, pretty much like 160 meters does. But I know that there'll be stations on the air at the time that I'm trying to listen. You know, only got that short couple of minutes there that I can listen for this. So I'm going to pick out some stations that I want to try to pick up that normally would only come in at night here. And we're going to see how that goes. Now, I do have a tip for watching it, and I don't know why I haven't seen anybody suggest this yet, but it worked the last time we had a total eclipse here, and we did, it was over 20 years ago. I don't remember exactly when the last one was.
1979.
Okay, I was working at, a group of stations here that is owned by iHeart now. I took a little inspection mirror, you know, just a little circular mirror like you'll get at the auto parts store with a wand on it. I held that out the window, and I reflected the image of the sun against a building next to us. It was a brick building, so, you know, and it was kind of dark. And I could do that and get a big picture of the sun, or, you know, right on the side of the building there, sort of like a projector. So that's how I watched it last time.
You can do the pinhole in the end of a shoebox as well, and that way it projects the shadow of it on the other side of the shoebox. That's another great way to look at it without actually looking at it, and you don't need special glasses or welder's glasses or anything that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I remember seeing one back in grade school. I don't think it was a full eclipse, obviously. And someone asked, I'm going to see about 80 to 85% of it as well. Next thing I had to say, this was really disappointing. I saw this on Facebook, so it has to be true. But one school was canceling any kind of solar eclipse viewing because they couldn't guarantee safe glasses for all the students. I thought that really sad. I know. But
you would think the science teachers would know what to do to like, you know, the pinhole in the shoebox thing is a mirror shining onto a wall across the street or something. You would think a science teacher would not, or someone would know how to Google that. How do you watch an eclipse in Google? Morons. What is wrong with people these days?
I could not believe it. And I'm really hoping, but it said, parents, you're more than welcome to pick up your kids. They'll have an excused absence. So parents do that and take their kids out and go see the eclipse because, man, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity usually. It was just disappointing to see that. All right. I have one other announcement, and that's about the Ham Nation 300 challenge. We haven't forgotten about it. And obviously some of you guys haven't either. So make sure you tally up your points and get those sent into us to hamnation300@gmail.com. And you have until August 31st to do that. So We'll remind you again. We'll be reminding you on Facebook. By the way, you can follow us on Facebook, HamNation on twit.tv. Other than that, I just have a couple of net announcements. So this is an important net announcement. We have 20 meters at 14,268. Steve's running the helm there. Let's see. 71.92, I think, is for 40 meters. I didn't actually get a confirmation on that, but you guys just look around. You'll find it. 14 Charlie for the D-Star net. Already going on. I have it in the background here in the next room. I'm going to jump on. Echo Link, do drop in. You guys know this drill. TAC 311 for DMR. So hopefully we'll hear you on some of those. And thank you so much. That's all I have. Bob, you take it.
I have one bit of housekeeping, I guess, for Ham Nation 300 too. The certificates. The certificates are on the way. We've had a ton of issues with the certificates. The person who is in charge of that had a change in their employment status. They had a change in the web hosting. Just a bunch of different things have conspired against us on that. We have not forgotten about that. We are feverishly working behind the scenes to get those certificates out. It is no fault of any one person. It's just events have conspired against us. We have not forgotten you. We will get you your certificates out, and hopefully very soon. We're working on that behind the scenes as hard as we can. So I just want to do that little bit of housekeeping on that. Bob, over to you.
All right. Well, it's been a ton of work for everybody, so be patient, everybody. Just be patient. Last word about that. Hy-Vee is a major department food store here in Springfield and around the Ozarks. And I saw a news report at 6 o'clock. They sold 6,000 glasses today. They were lined up around a building about three times. Good grief. But at least they're going to have glasses. So there you go. Well, thanks, everybody. This has really been a great show. We've been kind of messed up. I don't know what happened to my feed, but anyway, I messed that up. But they'll fix it in post, I think. And we're so happy to have all of you here, and what a delight to have the wonderful Marty with us, and we congratulate him, and we'll look forward to having him back very soon and see how he enjoys being a king of a day. That's what's going to happen this weekend for him. Well, listen, take care, everybody. Have fun. Be sure to cover your eyes. Be sure you make sure that all of that is going to be okay. And we'll meet you on the band maybe for 2 minutes. 7-3, everybody. This is K9EID and all of us from Ham Nation. We'll see you back here next week.